He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Figo.
And then Ronaldo. Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo. Sensational.
Bernardo Silva. Smacks in City's second. Here comes Eder. Not got much help. Oh, he doesn't need any help. How about that? Portugal. And tonight they've been simply magnificent. Champions of Europe 2016.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Portuguese Football Show. We're now on episode 5. As usual, it'll be myself, Aaron, and also I'm joined by Philippe. Philippe, how's things?
Hello, brother. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Excited to talk for another hour or two about Portuguese football.
Yeah, it's always.
So we'll just get straight into it. I want to start off with the Primeira Liga, and I want to start off not at the top, with the sides who are pushing Sporting at the top or for European places, but I want to start with a relegation battle. And I was thinking about this when I was planning the notes for the podcast, because I was thinking, can you call it a relegation battle? Because relegation battle, usually three or four teams near the bottom, and then you've got maybe a couple of more that are at risk of falling in, but they're not at a heightened risk like some of the other teams. But when you look at the Primeira Liga and the table at the moment, after 20 games played, Jona the 20, from 9th place, Rio Ave, I've got 22 points, all the way down to 18th position, Marítimo. They're on 17 points. The teams that are caught down there, you've got Marítimo on 17, Boavista on 18, Famalicão on 18, Farense on 18, Gil Vicente on 19, Portimonense on 19, and then it jumps up a little bit. We got Tondela 21, Nacional 21, Bayside 21, and then finally Rio Ave on 22 points. Now, above those, you've got some other teams that could possibly fall into it. You've got Santa Clara and Moreirense on 25, and then above that is the top six, I think. The likes of Vitória, and they're far enough away, fair enough, 32 points. Looking at that table and looking at some of the performances that we got this weekend from some of the teams at the bottom, this is a competitive, you can't even call it a bottom half of the table, a bottom half of the table. It goes right up. If you're including Moreirense and Santa Clara, you're going up to 7th position in an 18-team league. Have you ever seen, particularly in recent years, Philippe, I know we're only 20 games in, but anything like this or anything that's this competitive?
No, especially not in Portugal. Normally, one team around this time is already way out of any chance, like you had Aves last year. I think, well, two things. First, I think is a bad sign for one simple reason, that only the top six, so only those ones that are obviously safe from this battle, have positive goal differences. From the 7th place down, all of them had negative goal difference, which I don't think is a good sign. And then in these, all these teams, you have different phases. So you have like Santa Clara 25, that I think eventually will be dragged down to this fight, because they have these 25 points, but they are a lying 25 points because they started the season really well, and then they went down since Thiago Santana left, and they're still trying to figure out a way of playing without, obviously, their striker. Then I think Rio Ave is the other way up, which is they started really bad. I think the Europa League going all the way to playing against Milan done a good job, but then since then, since they changed the manager to Miguel Cardoso, they are coming up. Then I think Belenenses will be in this fight, but I think they'll be okay. Nacional, I think they will be okay as well. I think Tondela is coming down as well. They started well. They do really well at home. Away from home, they struggle all the time. I think Portimonense will be good because all the teams with Paulo Sérgio, they always start quite slowly, but then they end up doing good seasons, and especially the last 10, 12 games like we saw. I think then Gil Vicente will might struggle. Farense, like you said, they start. So these 18 points are quite lying points as well because they started really bad. And they have enough talent to be okay. And we saw this game against Benfica that even though Benfica is not the normal Benfica, they still have such a good team and they're able to be organized and still win a point. I think Famalicão will be okay as well because they have a good team. I think even though Steelers is not my preferred manager, I think they have enough quality to be okay. And then you have Boa Vista, which is a bit of a weird team because you look at probably the team that got the most unlucky this weekend because on Friday, when they won against Moreirense, I thought they thought that there would be a good week for them. And they find themselves in 17th place after winning game because all the teams above them, the closest ones, end up winning points. And then you have Marítimo, which is just a weird team because against Porto, done well, just lost at the end by 2-1. Against Sporting, they lose 2-0, but for the Cup they won. So they do well against big teams. Against teams that they need to play, they struggle. So I think give it another 3-4 games, I think we start to see more clearly which five teams will fight to survive, and there will be teams that will eventually be fine.
In terms of a time frame, because 20 games in, obviously we've still got a lot of football yet to be played, and I was going to say in terms of further along, and you move forward a couple of months, do you think it will go? It'll drop down to about 4 or 5 teams?
I think eventually it'll drop down to 4 or 5. Like I told you, I think Rio Ave will be getting enough points to run away. Mm. I think Famalicão will get enough points to be clear as well. So I think four or five games, and you'll see clearly 5, maybe 6 teams fighting for their lives, and the rest will be doing nice and easy league matches until the end. I don't see it being like this when there's only 4 games to go.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think...
That would be crazy.
I think the main thing that surprised me, and the reason why I said it was that it's been a good show, and perhaps that's just selfish because I'm enjoying watching it, is when you go through each team, there's a reason or two, or there's a player or two that makes you think... Yeah, they've got a chance of staying up. Like, yeah, they won't be dragged down into it. And, like, you're looking at the table the way it is now. Bovista, they've got, you know, a talented squad with some really experienced players in there. The same with Famalicão. I think I totally agree with your point that you made about the false position. The start of the season, and we spoke about this, I think, on last week or the week before's podcast, basically just a completely different team in terms of the players that they sold. I think there was a game recently and they had 10 different players compared to the last game of the season from last season. So that was a complete upheaval. So whether the longer they get together, obviously got the new manager in there with João Pedro Sousa leaving and Silas coming in. But they've got talent in the squad. Ferenc, when you've got a player like Ryan Gold, you've always got a chance because you've got a match winner there. And he won man of the match again yesterday. He didn't score or assist, but impacted the game in such a manner. On paper, you see the teams that will get dragged into it. And they're the obvious teams, but it's just whether it pans out that way. I mean, it's a cliche, but football isn't played on paper. And I think it would be very, very interesting to come back to this in, as you say, you know, a couple of weeks, maybe not 3 or 4 weeks, because obviously we've got the international break, but if you come back to this in a month or two and see exactly where we are and revisit this, because I do think it's one of the most entertaining stories. 22 points from the 9th place team down to the team who were 18th for around 17 points. It's just so close. I mean, I think there would have been 4 different teams on 18 points if Marítimo managed to hold on tonight. You know, I think it's competitive. If the smaller teams and the ones that don't have as big a budget and as big as, as strong of an infrastructure can go to these big sides and take points. It's competitive. That's what we see in the likes of the Premier League. The Premier League, there's no easy games. And you've got the teams that near the bottom can go and take points off the teams at the top. And I think in Portugal for so long, there's always been a clear sort of team that you can go and it's a guaranteed 3 points. You're not seeing that this season. You see, you could go through every one of those teams and they've all had fantastic results this season. Ferenc have been very unlucky in the big games, got themselves a point yesterday. mean, the only team that you can't really go and get a point off is Sporting at the top, because they refuse to lose a game. But everyone else is susceptible. So,
And I think, for like you said, for the neutral, it's good, because that means that almost every game in all every week have a story, because all the teams will be very, very close together and they'll need the points. So for the neutral, it's good. In terms for the quality in general, like the game that we're talking about, like Porto and Marítimo was able to keep the result until quite late, but it was not a good game.
No,
because one team is clearly doing one thing, which is playing in 25 meters and then hoping for a bit of luck in a quick transition or a set piece to score. If you think yesterday with Ferenc was different, because Ferenc was quite open as well and went to play. But if you see teams when they play against Tondela, Braga against Tondela, Tondela tried to change to be super defensive, didn't work. When Sporting play Nacional as well, Nacional obviously drops quite low. When teams play against Belenenses, the Belenenses just drops and tries to soak the pressure and play in the counter. So they are very organized and they make it really, really tricky. And one thing that's happening this year that I think makes a big difference as well is that's been raining a lot in Portugal, which make the pitches terrible, most of them. And that obviously is bad for the better teams.
Yeah, tell me about it. I mean, the Jamor this weekend, Stadio Nacional, was just... We tweeted out that it was more suited to a water polo game, and if you haven't saw it, go to the Twitter. And
but that's ridiculous, isn't it? Just... And the most ridiculous thing is that so the game was on Sunday or Saturday, Belenenses. It was Saturday, wasn't it?
It was Saturday. Yeah, they had the inspection. I think was it on Friday or Thursday?
They had the inspection on Thursday, I think.
Yeah.
And they said the pitch is okay, but it's like none of the league saw the check the weather, and everyone knew. There has been like a storm coming, so eventually, if this pitch is normally not good, it's not going to be any better now.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. I mean, but that's just Portuguese football in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, you look at the pitch now and think, it's in good condition, but you think you've got another 3 days of rain that's going to pull down.
Yeah, it's not going to held up.
And, it has been terrible. That's a good point. That even the video, I was watching the video. And we posted that of the coach coming in for Sporting before the game. And it was just battering down.
It's been terrible.
It's been so bad. And
I think that influence, especially because when you play in stadiums like Famalicão, people might not know, but Famalicão, Farense, Gil Vicente, no, because he's new, but Portimonense, Tondela, they are very, very narrow pitches. So it's already hard to play then, because obviously they'll drop and there's not much space to play. But when you play and the ball cannot even move quickly, it's much harder to create gaps between defenders to play through.
Benefits, so it just makes it easier for those teams. Yeah, that way that's a very, very good point. So, moving on from teams that like to defend, we move on to a team who really like to attack, and that's Braga. And they were very, very impressive again this week, a 4-2 win against Tondela. And I just want to start off by talking about one of the goals, and it was a goal scored, finished off, by Lucas Piazon, the ex-Chelsea player after numerous loans, is looking very settled in Portugal, and it's great to see. Just wanted to talk about an exchange I saw on Twitter. Lateral Esquerd, the accounts, they do like analysis and clips. Follow them on Twitter. They posted a video with a goal and they tagged Carlos Carvajal in, and they were praising him, and it was the video with the goal, it was a wonderful goal. And Carlos Carvajal actually replied, and he said the player's missing from the start, with a wink. And what he was referring to is the video that Sport TV, I think it was, or V Sports, who crop and post the videos of the goals, they started the clip off. It was like 10 seconds long, but the goal had actually started before that. And it was from this crucial piece of play, and it was Wenderson Galeno winning the ball just before the halfway line, or maybe on the halfway line. So Carlos Carvajal replied, and then they reposted it and said the play in full. And then Carlos Carvajal replied again, saying this is much better. Galeno's great recovery of the ball is half a goal, meaning that is half the goal itself. Is just that. And I think that attention to detail, one, we spoke about Carvajal before on Twitter and how involved he is, which is fantastic to see. But also, Braga themselves, Philippe, how impressed have you been with them, especially in recent matches? I just think, for me, they've been a real breath of fresh air. Obviously, the balancing playing in Europe with also playing in the Liga. Clearly a manager that takes great pride in how his team play. Very attractive to watch. What have you made of them from a tactical aspect? I know that's your forte.
Yeah, they are very, very impressive. And you look at Braga, how they play this year, and you look at how you have played under Carvajal last year, and there's so many similarities between the two. But in this game specifically, Tondela made it really, really easy. Because Tondela normally plays in a 4-4-3, and playing against Braga, they thought to drop it, because obviously they knew they would spend long spells without the ball. So they drop it to a 5-4-1 that obviously didn't work at all. Almost remind me when Portimonense, not this game time, but the first time Portimonense played against Sporting, and they changed the formation as well. And after 15 minutes, they're losing 2-0 and they change it again. And it was what happened in this game. In the first half, it's 3-0. In the second half, they change it. Braga still scores, and then Tondela end up scoring 2 when the game was already over. But yeah, and it was a shame the game against Roma for the Europa League, because I really thought Braga could do something. But Roma, fair play on them. Obviously, they have a manager that used to coach in Braga, so they know them. Paulo Fonseca knows them really well. And obviously, they studied perfectly, because something that everyone says about Braga is how Jgai is having a good season. And they found that, at least in that game, that Jgai was the main concern and the main problem. So the way Roma played against Braga was really good, because basically what they did, they played a defensive line and a center midline so close together that Ricardo Horta and Gaetan that day, they had no space to operate. So the ball didn't get to them. So we would go to the wingers on the edges, to, well, wingers, wing-backs with Jigayu and Galeno, which struggled to have an impact on the game. And every time they got close from the Roma wing-backs, there was space in their back because Mkhitaryan in one side and Pedro on the other were creating gaps. So, but in the league, it's been really good. And obviously, with Benfica not being such a good season, having such a good season, I think Braga and Benfica would fight for the last spot of the Champions League for the playoff.
Yeah, that third place. That's another thing as well. It's a good point to move on to. And I feel like that's something that's really well under the radar, is in terms of obviously the coefficients improved. So, gone are the days of Portugal having one qualified guaranteed group stage spot and a qualifier. They've now got, so the top two qualify automatically for the group stages of the Champions League.
The third place goes to the playoffs, to a playoff, or the one of the pre-rounds.
And just on the game with Roma, I think they were unlucky as well with the penalty incidents, and they were denied a clear penalty, Braga, that is, by the referee. And I think that's you know, a bit of a turning point in the game. And then obviously the player you mentioned there, Skyo, ends up getting sent off, showing a second
yellow. But not even when he gets the yellow. If you think about the first goal, straight in the beginning, is a ball that Roma played to Spinazzola, who was still playing as a wing back.
Yeah.
That Skyo thinks he can go and press. And he misses completely. He gets too late because obviously, normally, the picture is that the wing back is going to play back to the centre back and play from there. But was actually Veredut that was moving towards the ball. So they play 1-2 around Jigayu. And Mkhitaryan was already so open that sent Turmena so far out as well. When he got to him, it was too late. And then Jigayu didn't recover in time. But that happened so many times during the game. That is, to be fair, is a really good spot. And that's why these teams have good scouting departments, to check and try to find out things that other clubs haven't seen yet. In that case, it was clearly the space behind the wing back. They were too exposed. And to be fair, Braga for me is like a team. I don't remember who said this, but I think it's a really good way to explain it, which is Braga is a team that is like a person that misses a leg day in the gym. So they're very good attacking and midfield, but the three center backs are so poor, and they've been losing players throughout the season. So they lost David Carmo, obviously, for injured. They lost Bruno Viana, that went to Braga, and now they're playing with Raul Silva, which for me, I don't think has this level anymore. And sometimes they still need to play with Huland. So it's clearly a problem there that I think it might cost Braga in the long run, especially in the big games.
Defensively can look a bit susceptible at times. And obviously the wing backs, especially when they play someone like Wenders and Galeno, which they have done this season. Someone who prefers, you know, getting up there and attacking, and can be a little bit susceptible in terms of that space that he leaves in behind. I think in the league, as you say there, you quite rightly point out, especially with the season Benfica have having, if there's any season a club like Braga can go in there and try and get Champions League football, it's this season, and they'll be hoping to continue to pick up points and hope that their weaknesses, they can improve on the weaknesses, and they'll know what they need to improve as well. Carlos Carvajal is a manager who he knows exactly what his level as players are, knows exactly what to expect from them. I think they're on quite an impressive domestic unbeaten run, and the last time they lost was in the Taça da Liga to Sporting, and that's in all competitions, sorry, and then before that it was Passos de Ferreira, the 2-0, another side who were on a really, really impressive run. If you haven't listened already, myself and Philippe, we interviewed Pedro Oliveira, who's coach and a physio for Passos de Ferreira. We interviewed him last week, and we brought the podcast out a couple of days ago. He speaks about the impressive season that they're having so far. He talks about Pepe as a manager and as a mentor. Obviously, that's someone he's travelled from club to club with. He also speaks about his own career, ambitions for the future. And towards the end, we also ask about Europe. You know, is that dream on? Is that something that the club are thinking about? So, really, really good interview. Definitely go and check that out if you haven't already. And then, just moving on to Passos de Ferreira, they were another team that were in action. They got back to winning ways after the defeat to Sporting. They went into that game, you know, Ruben Amorim's men unbeaten, always going to be a difficult challenge, and they bounced back with a 2-1 win against Vitória. Not only did they bounce back, they actually went a goal down, which I think shows great character, because it would have been easy in that position after coming off that winning streak. It's always very fascinating to see how a team bounces back when they're in such excellent form and sort of someone puts a pin in it. And it's what do you do from there? Do you just completely deflate, or do you get back up again and go? And I think going 1-0 down, it's shown a great test of character. They equalised, you know, I think they equalised 9 minutes later, so wasn't a long time at all. João Pedro Silva with the goal, and then Gelda Ferreira scored the winner. And then they held on. They held on for the next half an hour, I think it was, scored round about the 60-minute mark. It was an impressive display just in terms of how disciplined they were. They had the ball. Vitória had more chances. They had more shots. But to be honest, I thought they were, as I say, they were very well disciplined. Everything we've come to expect from a Pepe side. They don't concede many goals. They do the basics well. Again, another victory for them. That takes them onto 38 points. Now just 1 point behind Benfica. They're 5 points behind Braga. So 5 points behind the Champions League space. Not far off at all. But I think if you'd have offered Passos de Ferreira a Europa League spot at the start of the season, they'd have absolutely snapped your hand off for that. So I don't think there's any disappointments so far this season. And they've also created a bit of a gap between themselves and Vitória. So they're in a European place at the minute. Vitória are beneath them in sixth place. They're on 32 points. So there's a 5-point buffer between the two. And obviously the victory came against Vitória. So a little bit, again, the cliche, a little bit of a 6-pointer. They actually got the 3 points against a rival, a European challenging rival.
To be fair, that game, I think so far this season has been one of the best games definitely the best game that didn't involve any of the big three, or if you had Braga, the four contenders for the title. Very, very intense game. If anyone haven't seen the João Pedro goal, go and see the first goal of Passos, because it looked like Ibrahimovic was inside of him when he scored. Amazing. And then with Passos, he's always good to watch. They're always so good. I see. Did you like the Ibrahimovic reference?
Yeah, that's what I was laughing at in the background.
Because it's true.
I tried not to catch that laugh on microphone, but he's so right.
I saw it, and I thought, Jesus, these men.
It was a lovely bit of creativity. As Philippe says, if you haven't watched it, go and watch it.
You'll be able to get that on Twitter. Brilliant. But then going back to Passos, they played so well. Like they finished the first half with almost 70% of possession. So at the end of the game it was 50-50, because obviously Guimarães, after the Passos goal, had more ball and tried to go over Passos. But they played so well. And there's one player in Passos de Ferreira that we still haven't mentioned. And to be fair, we didn't talk about it when he spoke to Pedro. And it's someone that's really impressive me. And especially the last 3-4 games, which is Marrakech, which is a centre back, not very tall, so he's only 184, which is not massive for a centre back. He's been in Passos last season and he played more than he was playing this season. But for me, he's a centre back that has everything. So if we're talking about Braga needing defenders, I think he would be perfect for a team like that, because he's very, very fast, he's very, very strong, and his body position is always so, so good. I was very, very impressed by him. And then the normal players, the midfield with Eustáquio, Bruno and Luis Carlos, done amazingly. They finished the game with more than 500 passes. To in comparison, Guimarães had less than 350, so it's 150 passes different. So that means clearly who had the ball under control the majority of the time. And then there's something else that Passos does so well, which is so far in set pieces, they have, I think, 11 goals in all competitions. And if you think about in the league, they scored 28. So you see how important are the set pieces. And the winning goal with Elder Ferreira came from a free kick as well.
Just mentioning then, when you were speaking about the passes, and we were speaking to, when we spoke to Pedro, we were talking about how Passos do both ends of the game so well. And for a team that had, you know, the majority of the ball for the majority of the match, obviously the possession did even up a little bit. I think they finished on about 57 or 58%. But another thing I wanted to draw attention to is just how well they did to win the ball back when they didn't have it. And I was looking at the tackling statistics. 21 tackles they made compared to Vitória made 8. In the entire game. 21 tackles, that's indicative of when they lost the ball. Because bear in mind, as I say, they had the majority of the possession. So they didn't need to tackle, yet still made 21 in the 90 minutes. Is losing the ball and getting after it without losing your discipline, without losing your shape. But just being very smart in the way that they went about the pitch, retain the ball. And that's why they don't concede goals, because, as you say there, they pass it about, they keep the game under control. They went 1-0 down, did they flap? Did they think about the defeat that had happened a couple of days earlier? No, of course they didn't. They remained calm, they stayed true to what they're good at. You know, they don't try and be something that they're not. They play well, they pass the ball well, they tackle, and all the characteristics that we've come to expect from a Pepper side. And I fully agree. You'll be able to watch the extended highlights of that on the VSports website. I keep shouting out VSports as if we're sponsored by them.
Sponsored by them.
Yeah, we're not. But they. I just think, especially for an English-speaking audience, some of the sport TV stuff you can't get because of like geo-locking and stuff, and you need all sorts of VPNs. But if you VSports, they offer. They have like extended stuff on the website in addition to the stuff they post on Twitter. So if you're someone who doesn't catch many Portuguese games, or you can only catch the games that are on Free Sports, which is frustrating at times because obviously every game they show involves one of the big three. So a game like this, you rightly mentioned there, Philippe, this is, if we're talking about games that haven't involved Porto, Benfica, Sporting, or even Braga, this is this was the one. I thought this was a thoroughly enjoyable game. And yes, again, it's a game that not a lot of people in the likes of England, the outside of Portugal, you would see, which is hopefully that changes in the future and the broadcasters can pick up a few more games, because there's real beauty in those games, I think. And not everything has to be sort of centred around the big three, but that's just me going off on a little bit of a tangent. Takes us to tonight's game. So we started recording pretty much as the final whistle went, and we covered it a little bit earlier, but not in too great of depth. We spoke about the team who were at the bottom of the table, Marítimo, or near the bottom. They lost 2-1 tonight against Porto. Already mentioned, you know, it's a very tight game, but I think Chico Conceição came off the bench. Francisco Conceição, Sergio's son, obviously came off the bench and won his second penalty for the club in his last three games. So made his Champions League debut against Juventus. The game before that, he made his league debut against Boavista, and he won the penalty in that game as well. He's a player that a lot of people talking about at the moment. But I wanted to focus on another player, a player who came on at a similar time. I think he came on as part of a double substitution. Philippe, you can correct me if I'm incorrect on that one. And that was Otavio. And I thought he had a really good influence on the game. They brought him on for that little bit of creativity. And I thought he got on the ball especially when he moved into those central areas. He tried to find passes, he tried to split the lines. Always difficult, especially when you go away to somewhere like Marítimo, where they're so compact, they're so structured. They try and, you know, they try and suffocate the ball at times. And as I say, to the credit, it may not, you know, result in the best game, but if Chico Conceição doesn't win that penalty and it's not converted by Otavio, it's 1-1 and Marítimo walk away with the point. So again, that's a discussion for another day. How do you like your football to be played? There's many different ways to play it. But I think, yeah, a massive win for Porto, in terms of that takes them above Braga, takes them on to 44 points. It keeps them, I think if they would have lost or they would have drawn that game and they would have fell even further away from Sporting, it's starting to look insurmountable. At the minute, it's a 10-point gap. You know, you hear 10 points and you think, but anything can happen in football. But I think it's an important win in terms of just getting it over the line. It wasn't the greatest of games. But yeah, as I say, Otavio was very, very impressed with him. Sergio Oliveira came off, and I think that was indicative of the game that Porto were playing, because whenever you take someone as influential off as him, or someone that usually has a massive impact on the game, it shows you that perhaps for Porto it just wasn't working. The thoughts on the game, Philippe, and any key players that stuck out?
For me, start by the end, by the penalty. I still don't know, and there's something I will try to find out, which is Taremi was supposed to score the penalty. And I was watching him thinking that's not a good idea, because they know each other, so because they both from Iran, so they play in the national team together. So I would imagine Amir knows how Taremi scores the penalties. And I don't know, because I was watching the game on TV, I don't know if you noticed that, but Sergio Oliveira is talking with Conceição after deciding to change the guy that's going to score. And I would be interesting to know if that came from Conceição, was actually Sergio Oliveira, which is normally the one that takes the penalties, to be like, just to give you a clue, like, those two guys know each other for sure, so just send someone else. So yeah. I would like to know that, because the image shows Sergio Oliveira talking with Sergio Conceição, but obviously we don't understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. But I think that was a very interesting thing to think about in such an intense game. Having been Sergio Oliveira, Conceição, Vitor Bruno, doesn't matter who he was, but someone with clear head to think about, okay, that might not be a good idea, which I think is really good and shows how it's important to have someone in the right frame of mind. Then for the game, just to explain quickly, Marítimo played in a 4-5-1, but was a very special 4-5-1 because without the ball, they were playing inside the box, basically, and they play instead of a five. Actually, the wingers drop to where the fullbacks normally would be. So they play in a 7-2-1.
I've never seen that one before, but
they play with a line of seven, so we might have to start putting lines of seven when you're analysing games.
Zinedine Jr. was in the middle with three players either side of him.
Yes,
it was like marshalling them like someone about to go into war. It was just absolutely outrageous to see.
Because when the ball was in the middle, so I think Ottavio, like we were speaking of before, for me, the key, they gave the Man of the Match award to Chico, but I think for me it would be Ottavio because he was the one who started thinking the game earlier. Uribe, I think he was struggling a bit because we saw sometimes him complaining about his back. I don't think he was top. Sergio Oliveira made a few passes in the end of the first half and beginning of the second. There was... thought the movements would be there, but neither Zaidu Aminafar had the legs to make them, so he was playing a different game. And Ottavio was able to from a middle area, to think about the game and do different things, because Corona was unable to influence the game because the lines were so compact, they had no space. Every time he was trying to take a player on, there would be someone else covering the first player, so he had no space to go. Marega, because they were playing so deep, they had no space to go in behind, so it was pointless, so he took him out as well. Then he had Taremi, which he keep. He put Tony Martinez as well to give a bit more presence in the box, which eventually gave the goal, the penalty. And I think Ottavio was key. He tried Corona on the left, on the right, where he normally plays. He tried in the middle for a while. He tried him on the left. He never worked. I think the wingers, Manafai and Zaidu, were too tired. You could see even when they had to recover, they struggled quite a lot. And then Maritim, even though, like I said in the beginning, is not the way that I enjoy watching, and I like we talked about in the beginning, I don't think for the neutral Maritim Boavista with Maritim playing like this, it would be, I don't think people would start watching football because of it. But they still had good chances at the end. They had the counter where Pep didn't keep up with the Ali Tajor, the Maritim striker, and then the corner where they had two great chances. But yeah, it was just a matter of Porto trying to break down a team that's really, really deep, and they sometimes struggle to do it because the big players, the most influential players, are not able to influence that way. Because Marega needs space, he doesn't have it, Corona needs a bit of space, and he didn't have it either in this game. So I think Ottavio getting in was a big, big difference. And then I just want to say one more thing, which is I honestly think if Porto knocks out Juventus with... I like Manafa because obviously in the other podcast we talk about, for me, could be one of the names to go to the next call-up, especially if the English players are allowed not to send their players to play. But Zaidu sometimes is something that I don't understand because he's very quick, his crosses are really good, his set pieces are quite good as well. But he has one moment in this game that I think that he'll struggle to make this level, which is when he has a 1v1 against Correa, which is the winger from Maritim, which is left. And this ball is on the right-hand side. So we know Corona, anyone that's seen football before, if you have a left-footed player on the right, is because you want him to curl in. Correa, in addition to that, is a very powerful shot. And Zaidu defends him like he never saw Correa play before. So he defends the outside, which gives him his space to come inside and have a shot, which Marchesin made a good save. But those little details is something that, which Zaidu, I just don't understand.
Yeah, concentration and also attention to detail.
Yeah.
When you obviously you have your pre-match, and they, you know,
I'm sure you've been told like 100 times. Yeah. Just in that moment, it goes off.
There you go. That's exactly what I was about to say. I think you can give, you're given instructions. You're told.
Yes.
You know,
for
this
sure
is what this player
knew,
does. But it's in those moments. Anybody can give, you know, an hour lecture and say this is what this player is going to do in this moment. But when it's crunch time and you're full of adrenaline and you're playing and it's those split second decisions, can you transfer it into a real game situation? It's all well and good, you know, playing attack v defence and somebody for Porto pretending to be someone like Correa, but can you do it, you know, in a game? And I do get that. I think Zaidu at times, I think in the game in the Champions League, he had a couple of those moments where it was a bit, you know, could you have done better there?
Even talking, that's a good point. Even talking about that game, the goal that Juventus
goal,
score,
yeah,
it can be said that why does he need to defend so close from Pepe? He should see that the striker in this case Morata, is making a run to the near post where the two centre-backs are there. He doesn't need to go in line with Pepe because the only threat is coming from behind him, which is Chiesa. To be fair, the ball was in spot like perfectly. It was a perfect ball for Chiesa.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need to drop that much. But to be fair, that's like nail-picking. It's really close to the end of the game. But this one is just those little concentration thing that I'm thinking, come on. You because you look at him and you see, okay, there's a good play here with the ball. If he improves this, then he can
be so good.
And he said pieces are good, and he's very good. He's a very good fullback for a big team that has the ball a lot of time. But it just this little bit that he needs to improve.
Yeah,
frustrates me a lot.
Yeah. It's frustrating because when you know someone's got, you know, they've got good attributes, but it's as you say, it's those. Well, it's those little details that separate the players at the very, very top and the players that are just good. I suppose at the end of the day, that's what the game's made up of is those elite characteristics and going, you know, to the next level. It's your concentration. It's all those other attributes that it's not just, you know, how fast you are, how strong you are. It's those little, what are you like in those decisive moments? So, now very good point. I thought, especially with the Champions League game coming up, the game against Juventus, which isn't until the 9th of March. But just in terms of, you mentioned there about them looking a little bit tired, thought a couple of the Porto team looked flat on the feet towards the end. They looked like a team who've played a lot of football recently, but they did look flat, and they get a bit of a rest now in terms of the let up isn't as intense, I don't think, after it. But I mean, you know, if they were to go out of that tournament, it wouldn't be the worst thing for Conceição's men's fitness. But obviously, they won't look at it that way. I'm looking at it from the practical point of view. But I think that might well. We always said that'll be something that affects the title race as well, because Sporting came into the season. They didn't have that to worry about. You know, after the last game. It was, you know, not a concern. Benfica dropped from the Champions League qualifiers into the Europa League, playing contending, playing in Europe, Braga playing in Europe, Porto playing in the Champions League, where you have to remain at 100%, you know, for 90 minutes, which is just so exhausting. And you can tell when you play against a team like Juventus. And yeah, I think you could see it in some of the legs there tonight that they played. It's such a high-level game against such a high-level opponent. And stayed, Porto pretty much stayed at 100% against Juve as well for 90 minutes. But I do think that was evident in the legs at times.
Yeah, and the good thing for Porto now is before Sporting, they have now 5 days to rest. But then after, it's going to be again 2 weeks tricky because they play Sporting, then midweek they go and play Braga for the second leg of the Taça de Portugal. Then they play Gil Vicente at the weekend. Then midweek, Juventus. And then at the weekend, Passo de Ferreira. So the next, apart from this week now before playing Sporting, the 2 weeks after that they'll be again playing quite a lot of football.
Yeah, very, very tough.
And I think, looking at this, obviously Sporting game will be key because if they lose, it might be over the title because 13 points will be... I'm not going to say impossible because in football you never know, but it'll be very, very hard. But the game before Juventus, we might be seeing something similar to what happened a game against Boa Vista before Juventus, which is the place thinking, if I go on the 50-50, I might be out of the Juventus game. And I think that plays always in the head of the players.
Yeah, spot on. And then the team who were at the top of the table, we've mentioned them a couple of times. To be honest, I thought it was a very professional display. I think you scored quick fire goals. Fidal on 27, Nuno Santos on 31. And that was it then for the game. They won 2-0. They kept a clean sheet. They kept Porto Moreno at bay. João Belinha walked away with another Man of the Match award. He's a player that we've waxed lyrical about.
And you know what? Ruben Amorim must hear our show. For sure, because we talked about last time he must hear our show, our podcast, because he talked about Paulinho to the national team, and in the press conference he talked about it as well. And now everyone speaks about it.
And now
so
everyone's talking
about another setting trends.
Like we were the first people to
yeah,
well, Paulinho to the national show. But yeah, I thought it was a really professional display. They had nearly 60% of the possession. They got I think 11 shots off. They kept the ball well. They were disciplined. They didn't receive a card, which is an indication of how controlled they were and how much of the ball that they had. Didn't receive one yellow card and I think it was a real one of those performances. Get two goals early and then we'll play the game at our tempo. You've got to come and come to us now if you want to get anything from the game. But those two quick fire goals, they didn't half take the wind out of Portman into sails. And then obviously you go into half time and then after it was just much of the same. But what did you make of the performance?
Not much. It's just literally what you said. For me, and that's what I like about football, so I'm going to say it again. Same thing that annoyed me with Zaidu was, and Paulo Sérgio, to be fair, he spoke about it. The two goals of Portimonense are very, very silly. The first one is a free kick that people look at it and think, okay, it was a free kick, Coates wins the first ball, and Fedal then scores. But the problem is, when Coates wins the ball and then Fedal wins the ball, the Portimonense is defending in a zonal marking. For people that don't know, zonal is when you're not in the man, you have a specific zone. And every coaches will tell it, the only thing you need to do is attack the ball in your zone. The ball's coming in your zone, you need to attack it. And Coates jumps too easily, and then Fedal doesn't have to even jump when he has the touch on the leg before the keeper saves it, and then the rebound goes in. And that's silly, because you need to attack the ball. You don't need to look at a play, you need to attack the ball, and they haven't done it. And then on Portimonense, something that Ruben Amorim said as well, which was, if he's running so much and the pitch is getting so heavy, don't play the ball back or between centre-backs when they are very, very close, because the ball will slow down. And Portimonense just did exactly that. So two silly mistakes that made the game very easy for Sporting. And then after this, like you said, very, very basic, solid performance where you watch that second half and you think, if Portimonense scores, we might have a game again, but I don't see them scoring because I don't think Sporting will give them that chances. So I think they only have one real chance, which when Adam makes a good save. But apart from that, Sporting had it always under control.
Yeah, didn't look at any points that they were in any danger. I think the ability, Shay, you pointed out the two mistakes, the ability to go into a 2-0 lead and rest, well, not rest, but... You don't have to play every game at 100% high intensity. Let's go on and win this 7-0. It doesn't have to be like that, especially when you've got games coming thick and fast. Can you get yourself into a position of control? Can you get yourself, you know, into a 2-0 lead? And can we just not, just don't do anything stupid and just avoid making mistakes? Can you get substitutes on the field? Can you get the likes of Jovan Cabral, get in, you know, come on, play half an hour, Tabata, come on, play 10-15 minutes, Mateus Nunes, Braganza, like, just getting people, you know, on and off the field, getting yourself into a 2-0 lead, keeping a clean sheet, not conceding many big chances. You mentioned that Adan save, but other than that, it was total control. And another team who are near the bottom of the table, a team we spoke about at the start, come up against a team, Raven, as we mentioned, a poor season by their own very high standards, and that was Ferenc versus Benfica. It was a game that took Ferenc out of the relegation zone. Ryan Gold was man of the match. It was an interesting game, I think, from the neutrals' perspective, because I think a lot of people would expect, who don't know Ferenc, and expect, they just see a team near the bottom of the table playing against a team like Benfica. They expect it just to be attack versus defence. And they expect it to be, you know, one team with all the authority, with all the power, with all the ball, with all the opportunities, and another team with 10 men camped on the edge of the box. But I don't think it played out that way. I thought Ferenc were, at times, tried to play some good football. They were let down on the same side by... some really silly mistakes in possession in terms of when they tried to transition and break. There was a couple of opportunities where either Gold or Jonathan Lucas had the ball and they'd release it either to Maddy Keita or Pedro Henrique, and for one reason or another, Benfica won the ball back to the credit. But I think sometimes just making that wrong decision. But I think they try to play at times. Obviously, they have to be disciplined at other times. You know, they only had 34% possession, so Benfica were there. They're the, you know, the team you expect to dominate. But I think it wasn't this David Villa-Goliath story that you'd expect. I thought they tried to play well to the credit. They had more shots on target than Benfica, 3-2. They had 8 shots in total. They had 4 corners. They tackled well. 18 tackles to Benfica's 14, 15 interceptions. And again, I think, go back to it again, Gold won the man of the match. He didn't score or provide an assist, but every time he got on the ball, it looked, and as it does every week, for Ferenc, he looks like the man who's going to make it happen. I think if just they just had that little bit of quality, they could have punished Benfica yesterday. And, you know, they'll be happy with the points, obviously, but you know, they'll be part of that. They'll be part of that Ferenc squad that be thinking, if I would have just made the right decision in this instance. But just sometimes running down, you know, blind avenues and just running down just the wrong channels. But I think it was a very interesting game, especially from a neutral's perspective.
Yeah, I think was after the Passos Guimarães game, I think was probably the best game of the weekend. And you could see such a big difference between Ferenc and Marítimo. Both of them, well, Ferenc even got the point, but both of them fought until the end to get their point against a big team, but in completely different ways. If Marítimo, like we spoke about before, it was a team that basically stopped playing and just going on a counter and being really, really far back, Ferenc was the opposite. They still tried to play their way. They created loads of chances. Maybe not as clear chances what Marítimo actually created, but they were still playing a much more attractive football. That's why for the neutral, I think, was so interesting. Then Benfica, obviously, they made a lot of changes. They went back to a 4-4-2. Which obviously when they play against Arsenal, they change it to a 5-3-2. But there's things in Benfica that I don't understand how they keep doing it. So, for instance, I think it's clear enough for everyone that Darwin and Seferovic up front, they don't work. And you could see, not that Darwin is better or worse player than Seferovic. I think Darwin is a better player than Seferovic is. But when Lucas Waldschmidt go into the game, we could see two different players, being Lucas and Seferovic. Seferovic is much more as a striker, and Lucas can move into pockets of space, much more about linking up play. The game flows a lot better. Because the first half, especially, Benfica, if you a player had the ball in the centre mid, being a centre back or a centre mid, they had no one moving. So Everton was too static. Rafa was the one that was more dynamic. But the big problem with Rafa is he misses too many chances to score. Darwin Seferovic, very, very static. Hard to create chances for each other. And I think that really hurts Benfica. Because if they play with two strikers like that, I think they're going to try to go to the wingers and make crosses. So Everton going to the line and make a cross because they have presence in the box. But they don't do that. Everton goes on the line and pulls back inside. Then Everton obviously is tired because he had a long season in Brazil, but he has too many touches per action. So what I'm meaning with this is to do a pass, he takes too many touches. To shot, he has too many touches. Even if he wants to take a proper dribble, so a progressive dribble, he takes too many touches until he actually gets to that position. And I think that is taking time for Benfica to get in a good groove. And I think that's really hurting them. And just to finish, Jorge Jesus said at the end that they missed someone to score a goal. And that made me think about, because Darwin Sanchez, being a good player, he misses a lot of chances to score. He only has 4 goals in the season so far. And I thought, okay, he missed a lot of chances. The expected goals might be really, really high. So he should have scored a lot more than he actually does. I went on and checked, and so far in expected goals, they have 7.4. And he scored 4, so it's not a big difference. In points, could be, because if he scores against this goal, there's an argument to say that if he could have won, so it would be 3 other points, and there was more games where he could have scored and he didn't. So it could translate into points, but not that much in goals. And then to the opposite, I went to check Pedro Gonçalves. His expected goals are 5.87. He actually has 14, so it's completely the opposite, just to see the difference. But I think that Benfica will definitely improve if, for me, Lucas Waldschmidt needs to play in this team.
Agreed. 100% agreed on that, especially on the Luca Waldschmidt point that that you just made there. What I find sort of bizarre is that at the start of the season, and especially in those early Europa League games, when Benfica were managing, you know, they put in some good performances. The season hasn't all been doom and gloom. Well, I remember reporting on both Darwin and Luca Waldschmidt, the partnership that they'd established, because they were playing together. Seferovic wasn't really getting a look in, and it was clear, because each week it was like one of them was doing all the assisting and the other one was doing the scoring, and it was sort of highlighting the good in each of them. And I think they had, in terms of assist to goal, like a partnership, like goals created as a duo, they were at one point, they were one of the highest in Europe in terms of goal combinations. Yeah. As I remember looking at the stat, especially early on in the season, and then it sorted to just dwindle away. And then, as you say, he's tried to rotate. He's brought in Seferovic, and some of the partnerships, I agree, just don't work. And the points, a lot of people were frustrated with that point about Benfica missing someone sort of to put the ball in the back of the net, because obviously they're looking at Carlos Vinicius sitting more or less on the bench for Tottenham Hotspur. He's playing in the cups and stuff, and when he's playing well, but he's not playing Gonçalo Ramos in the B team, who scored.
That could be today. Would be my next point. That's a very good point, because I even think that Darwin and Gonçalo Ramos would be a better partnership than Darwin and Seferovic.
Yeah,
because
a lot of people want
their link up play together. They don't gel together. They seem too similar to play together.
It looks awkward. I think it looks awkward. And another thing is they occupy each other's space a lot. Sometimes you see them and they're so close together. There's no designated zone as to this is how you. Maybe it's just that they're not cohesive. They haven't gelled together. They don't know each other makes. They don't know each other's runs and stuff, and maybe that's just because they're too similar, because they play, the style is too similar. So, but surely Jorge Jesus knows the quality someone like Gonçalo Ramos has got, but it's that age-old question.
Because if you think about all the partnerships that Jorge Jesus had in the past, was with two players different. So Flamengo last year was Gabigol and Bruno Henrique, very different players. In Sporting was Bas Dost and Bruno Fernandes. Before that was Slimani and Theo. In Benfica he had Cardoso and Rodrigo. Cardoso and Rodrigo. Then he had on his last bit at Benfica, he had Mitroglou and Jonas. So you can see clearly the one that's going to be more static and the one that's going to be more mobile and moves about the pitch.
Yeah.
And I can see that in Darwin and Lucas, I can see Darwin can stay more in the middle and Lucas to move into spaces, or Seferovic and Lucas. But the two of them, they just don't combine. Their link-up play is not good enough. And they're actually what, for me, in my view, what kills Benfica is that. Because they are creating, but they... What he says about putting the ball in the box, ball in the goal in this game against Farense, yes, they had 10 shots inside the box, but there were still chances that you think about, and it looks forced. Everything looks forced.
Yeah, 100%. And I thought that a lot of the crosses they put in yesterday, just high and with no, like, as if they don't even know where the strikers are going to be or what spaces they're going to gamble in, and whether that's because they alternate the partnerships and they haven't sort of began to develop, you know, a true understanding. But you think...
No, yeah, and that's something...
Some of the crosses yesterday were so... And they were so hit by players with such talent as well. Like, I think there was an instance, and it was in the... forgive me, I think it was in the second half. Was it Nuno Tavares? And he played the cross. It was either Nuno Tavares or Everton. And they just played this, like, everyone can put a bad cross in. This was abysmal. Like, it literally, like, went from one end to the other. And yeah. then, literally, I not think, 5 minutes later, Rafa Silva did the exact same thing. And it's like, can none of these players cross today? Like, can Rafa Silva not cross? Gilberto, Nuno Tavares, Everton. Like, these are players who can cross a ball.
I think I know which moment of Everton you said, because I was going to say exactly it. But the other way, like, putting another perspective, which is, Everton is a right-footed player playing on the left. Mm-hmm. He wants to come inside. Sometimes there's no space. If a good defender pays attention, not like Zaidu, like we spoke before, but it happened in the game that the right back, the Buddha, was always pushing him to his left foot, so down the line. And then you think, I'm a striker at Benfica. I've been playing with Everton. I know he's left-footed. He's been pulled to this left foot. He's not going to be able to cross to the far post.
Deep. Get in front of the man.
Get in front, get to the near post, and you see Darwin Seferovic looking at him, making, okay, I'm going to make the same run if he crosses to the right and the left, and it's impossible. He's being under pressure, putting to his weaker foot. You need to make a run to the near post. Yeah. Because there's no way he's going to put a ball in any other place in the box.
No.
But there's those things that they don't click in, and he's like, ah. I imagine it must be very frustrating for Jesus, because, and even for Everton, because if you play football, you expect your teammate to know you a bit better than, because it's not 1 month they've been playing together. It's been almost a season now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's they're just waiting. They're waiting for it to click, but it feels like you can't expect things to just happen. Like you can't. You know when people say the type of thing like, oh yeah. Benfica, they'll put a run together towards the end of the season. You know, clubs like that always do. Yeah, but something has got to change. That doesn't just happen miraculously. Yeah. Benfica don't just wake up one day. If they carry on the way that they are, they'll end the season like this. They will fully just end the season. Like, the last couple of games, they obviously lost to Sporting in the league. They drew with Vitória. Again, they looked toothless in that game. Morenense 1-1. Again, yesterday, 0-0 for Ains. This, you can't do the same things over and over and expect the same and expect different results. That just doesn't happen. So they need to sort of get it together. They've got Arsenal, then they've got Rio Ave, then they've got Estoril in the second leg, and then they've just got the run of obviously straight the Premier League matches. And yeah, they need to. I mean, he can say that he's trying different striker combinations, but they've got to try something else.
I think Benfica looked better against Arsenal than what they did now. Because
did?
I think the three centre-backs really helped them. I think Verissimo is a very good signing.
Yeah.
And I think Verissimo, Otamendi and Vertonghen at the back really worked. And then big problem in the centre-mid against Ferenc, Tarabat and Gabriel were just not good enough. They couldn't create anything. And I think with three centre mids is much, much better, because even against Arsenal, a better opposition, they were trying to press them a lot higher. They were able to especially in the second half, to keep the ball a lot better. And a team like Benfica, especially with Jesus, needs to be able to understand when can we keep speed in the game and when can we calm down the game to have a bit more ball, to make sure the fullbacks are high, my wingers are coming inside to give more options with the ball, and sometimes Benfica feels that everything is rushed.
Yeah, 100%. And that is that for this week's episode of the Portuguese Football Show. Thank you for listening. This week was a little bit of a Premier League special. Enjoyed speaking about the clubs in Portugal. That is about it for this week. We'll be back with you soon. We're going to have a special episode. Not going to reveal just what, yeah, but a special episode coming this week, and then also the Portuguese Football Show will be coming next week as well. So thank you for listening. Philippe, thank you for coming on, as always. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, always love it.
And yeah, if you made it this far, thank you very much. Don't forget to rate us on Apple, on iTunes if you're listening, share it with your friends, retweet, whatever it may be, and catch us next time. Thank you.
He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Figo.
And then Ronaldo. Oh, what a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo. Sensational.
Bernardo Silva. Smacks in City's second. Here comes Eder. Not got much help. Oh, he doesn't need any help. How about that? Portugal. And tonight they've been simply magnificent. Champions of Europe 2016.